came up against your home.
Test.
The enemy came up against your children.
Come.
The enemy came up against your name. The enemy came up against your character. You will win, win. You will win, win. The enemy came up against your health. The enemy came up against your finances. The enemy came up against your vision. The enemy came up against your business. You will win. Oh, you will win. Yes, you will.
Everything attached to you wins. I
said everything attached to you wins. Can you point to your neighbor and tell them everything attached to you wins? Come on, let's say, tell them everything attached to you wins. Now just tell them, say, it's your winning season.
It's your winning season.
It's your winning season. You've got God to carry you. You've got God to carry you. That's what he's gonna do tonight. Cause you can't afford to lose again. You can't afford to lose again. Oh, it's your winning season. Last time say, everything attached to me wins. This is what I need you to do, because I realize that you can't say you are a winner but look defeated. I need you to get up out of your seat and high five 10 people across this room. Don't just stay at your room, tell them across the room that you will win. Come on, high five 10 people and tell them you will win. You will win. God don't birth failures. God don't call you defeated. You are a winner.
You will win. Yes. Good morning. Good morning, all. Assalamu alaikum. What's happening? How y'all doing? Praise the Lord. Yeah, you're listening to Recovery Radio in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, down in Harpers Ferry. Enlightened Radio down at the caboose. My greetings to all. Everything attached to me wins. I am feeling it this morning. The sun is beautiful out. I had a nice drive down from Spring Mills, And you know, it's very captivating coming across the mountainside and being clean and sober today. Everything attached to me wins. I like the song that you were listening to is by Jacqueline Carr. Yeah, the lyrics, everything, you will win. Everything attached to me wins. It's my winning season. And I feel that way this morning. So, you know, I say good morning and cheers to everybody today. You know, there's a lot of special things going on in the community in terms of facing addiction and getting all your ducks in a row. So I'm kind of excited to bring you this broadcast this morning. We're going to be talking about possibilities, many possibilities. There are possibilities all around when you get involved in sobriety. You know, I like the idea of being in recovery, being sort of a leadership in long-term recovery. So that's what we're going to be talking. A lot of possibilities, lots of possibilities that came open to me when I put down the needle and picked up the responsibility. And so we're going to be talking about possibilities this morning. What is possible in your life if you stay stopped? If you're using drugs, heroin, cocaine, marijuana, drinking liquor and laying all over the sidewalk, I have some great possibilities for you this morning that we're going to be talking about. My message this morning is about how to stay stopped and how to get involved in a community that's all about long-term recovery. You know, I came up with a concept on my own in recovery for myself. It's called the Healing Forest, and I like to participate with myself about myself, and I do it to myself in lots of cases. You know, I do things. I have a ritual that I perform every morning, and I'm thanking my lucky stars. You know, I've heard that saying, and I sometimes wonder about that. Do you have lucky stars? It seems that I have lucky stars. So I thank my lucky stars each day that, you know, I finally made it out of that dungeon of despair that heroin addiction had me in. And so today is one of those days. This is an amazing platform. I thank my lucky stars again for an opportunity to even convey this message in and of myself. I am nothing but everything attached to me wins because my sponsor says so. He says, just go out and live your life and do the best that you can do and be the best person that you can be. So those are some of the possibilities. When I got clean, and I got to talk about my story because this is a podcast. This is talk radio. And usually, I get a caller and I can have a conversation, a two-way conversation. But it's when it's just me. Sometimes I try not to toot my own horn, but I've been clean and sober for a long time. After a long time addicted to substance, heroin, as a matter of fact. And so there were many possibilities that opened up for me right away when I finally started, when the dust settled and all the cobwebs cleared and I was able to wake up instead of coming to, and I was able to go to sleep at night instead of passing out. How many been there? How many have experienced that? Yeah, and so I like to talk about my journey because that is the journey that was given to me, and I'm still on the journey, but I know that I'm in my lane. I feel like I got the, I guess it's what's called a runner's high, you know, and I've been, some of the possibilities that have opened up for me is public office. I've been invited to, oh, Mr. Boyd, why don't you run for public office? And from what I see, you know, I think I would do really well, but the struggle, I'll have none of it. You know, I'd rather be out here with you guys and trying to get a handle on this epidemic that we are facing. But some of the possibilities, and I'm flattered by those things. I think I have a caller coming in right now, and I hear my phone ringing. But yeah, possibilities. So I want to talk about hello, caller, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Caller, Salim.
Oh, Salim. Oh, you're becoming a regular. How you doing, brother?
Yes. I'm doing good.
Yeah. I'm doing pretty good. Just we're talking about possibilities this morning. But for those who don't know, this is Salim's third time calling in, and I really appreciate him. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Salim, where you are and how did you come to be?
Right now I'm in North Carolina. You know, I live in Texas, but I'm moving either to North Carolina or Georgia.
And how's it going? How's that working out for you?
Well, right now in North Carolina, I don't have a realtor, but I do have a realtor in Georgia. So Georgia looking more promising than North Carolina.
What part of Georgia are you in, my brother?
What is this called? Offdale?
Oh, you don't know where you at? You're not lost, are you?
No. It's called Offdale.
Offdale, okay.
Offdale, Georgia.
Never heard of it, but I'm sure I want to hear more about it, especially since my best friend is going to be living there. Celine, talk to us a minute. Do you have a few minutes to stay on with us, a couple of minutes? I want you to talk to us about because I know you came out of an addicted community addicted to substance, and you were a victim to that yourself for many years. But you went to Egypt. Tell me about that and why you did that.
Well, originally, man, I went to Egypt to learn the Arabic language. But in Egypt, they teach, they have schools that teach you Arabic language, but the people speak what they call Aramaic. And Aramaic is it's a slang of the original Arabic language, but it's the Egyptians' original language is Aramaic and not Arabic.
Mm-hmm. And do they have a? So, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to ask.
I lived in a gated community.
Which kind of community is that? Can you? Oh, a gated community.
Yeah, it was a gated community called New Rehab,
uh-huh.
All Rehab, and it was a real nice community, and I'll tell you a little something about it, man. It's like if you go to the doctor and the doctor give you a prescription to go to the pharmacy. Well, the pharmacy is going to fill that prescription and he's going to give you that prescription back. And you can come back to him anytime with that same prescription where you don't have to go back to the doctor.
So if they
and
were...
What you see there,
oh, so that's a kind of a twist. That's very interesting. Tell me more about that process.
Well, and another thing that they do that America is now beginning to do is you can place an order for grocery online. You can call the grocery store. They take your order. You can call McDonald's, you can call Burger King, you can call Wendy's, Hardee's, you can call any store, and they'll make a delivery at your house.
So that's pretty interesting. I want to get back to the prescription part because this is Recovery Radio, and that's a really interesting topic that I want to discuss. But I want to ask you, we were talking, the subject matter this morning is possibilities. What made it possible in your mind after you stopped using drugs to move to Egypt? What came up? How did you go ahead?
I needed a change in life.
Uh huh. You need.
I needed a different change of life.
Mm-hmm. And so
At that time, I was living in Newark.
Newark, New Jersey.
In Newark, New Jersey, and my wife, she wanted to go to Egypt, and Egypt is so full of Americans, man, it's a shame.
Yeah? Yeah, what is America bringing to that?
I have friends of mine getting ready to leave America within 2 weeks, and they're headed back to Egypt to live,
okay. And you lived there how long?
I lived there 5 years.
5 years? It doesn't seem like you were gone that long, man. Really missed you. So tell me, can you say something in Arabic for me?
Well, if I say what you want, okay.
I want you to say it and tell me what you said. Don't say no cuss word. Don't call me no name and I don't know what you're talking about. Okay.
No. I want to say Kaysa Haluki.
What is it?
Kaysa?
Kaysa Haluki. And you actually went to a university there, or you studied online, or?
Well, I didn't go to university, but I went to what they call a madrasa. It's a school.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaysa Haluki means, how are you?
Mm-hmm. And so you transitioned after your addiction and everything, you transitioned and you changed your name. And we went through all of that on our last segment or the segment before that. So we're well aware of the transition. And so what made you, how do you think Egypt fares in terms of the economic situation for especially, I guess everybody in Egypt would be people of color. That's okay. That's a given. But for yourself in Egypt, how were you treated and how do you think your dollar made a difference in your life?
The Egyptians have they're very nice people, but they're very poor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the dollar right now in Egypt is worth $17 of American money. Their money is worth $17 of America. You can go to Egypt and you can get you they call it flats, but we call it an apartment. You can get a 3-bedroom, 2 full baths, and everything over there for about $400-$500 a month of American money.
Wow. So that's really interesting. Possibilities, possibilities. And so you were 100% disabled veteran, post-traumatic stress disorder. So that was your source of income. You're an American veteran, Vietnam combat veteran, I might add. And so the possibilities were that you were able to take your disability check and move to Egypt and live a substantially good life.
I probably wouldn't be back here had my wife not gotten sick.
Okay.
If she hadn't gotten sick where she needed an operation, the kind of operation that she needed, they couldn't perform over there. So when we came back here, it took us such a long time and for her to recover that we just went on and stayed back here. And matter of fact, we had just left Egypt. You remember what they call the spring uprising?
In Egypt, yeah, I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we just left a month or so before the uprising. So they were, people was trying to get out when they found out what was going on, because on the streets, you're always going to hear what's going to happen in Egypt long before it happened.
How does that look in the streets? People start, are they walking around mumbling about it, or is it the newspapers, or what?
No,
what's that sounds kind of.
See, the people is the news.
Oh.
The people is the news. You know, the newspapers, they'll shut the newspapers down, they'll shut down the TVs, they'll shut down everything. You know, Egypt, under what this guy named Sisi right now, they shut down everything over there, news, everything. But they still have Americans going back over there to live.
Mm-hmm. Possibilities, possibilities.
I'm saying like this here. A lot of Americans, they'll think that Muslims is their enemies. But I'm going to tell you this. You will find Americans in every Muslim country that they say that is an enemy to this country, and they live better in those countries than they do here economically, because the value of the dollar goes longer in those countries.
And so you were able to continue to get your money deposited via direct deposit. Now we're talking about possibilities.
Yeah.
Into your
what happened with that, I didn't realize that. You know, when you leave the country, you must inform the government or the bank that you're leaving and going overseas. If mm-hmm. they don't know that you're going overseas and you go over there and you use your debit card, they're going to shut it down.
Oh, because they think
What happened, they shut me down for about a month until I had to prove that I was who I was over in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. And so,
once I proved that, I was able to go to the debit, ATM over there and use my debit card every day.
And so when you got back to the States, because I talked to you quite a bit, you're having a situation where, because your name is Salim Pasha, you got to prove yourself again, huh? You say, my name's Salim Pasha, and I'm a Vietnam combat veteran from the United States of America. I think do you get stigmatized here? As a Muslim person?
You know what? I got stigmatized here. But ironically, as a Muslim, I got more stigmatized in Egypt.
Oh, you did? By the Egyptians?
Yeah, because, see, the Egyptians, they don't look at African-Americans as being Muslims.
And what?
They thought that I was a Somalian trying to sneak into America, and I had to always go through like customs, second customs, to be interrogated on who my family was and where my father was born and all of that. And I had to go through Egypt like that.
Possibilities, and, possibilities, possibilities.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to say this like this here.
Go ahead.
I don't know why it's like that, but more Caucasians lived in the city where I lived at called Rehab.
Mm-hmm.
A Caucasian can go through Egypt and live in Egypt and get a quicker passport in Egypt than I can as a Muslim.
Wow. So kind of make me understand what you just said. Can you say that again?
Yeah. They give the white people an easy visa to come into Egypt than they do African Americans.
Okay.
Saudi Arabia is the exact same way. Mm-hmm. All the Muslim countries will favor giving white people more visas to come to their country than they do African Americans.
Okay.
And I'm a Muslim, and I'll tell you just how it is.
Mm-hmm. So what percentage of veterans have you come in contact with who are experiencing the same as you? Because I know a lot of the brothers decided to be Muslim.
Out in Atlanta, the one where I was just at down in Atlanta, is experiencing the same thing.
He's a veteran?
He's a veteran. He's a Muslim. You know, he's having problems. He's having problems. Matter of fact, man, he's having problems, man, even trying to get his Egyptian wife a green card. She has to leave the country every 6 months.
Wow. Yeah, that's such a challenge. And so possibilities after recovery, you know, after rehab, after all the meetings, possibilities happen for us. And so we're talking with Salim here this morning. He's giving us a rundown on his life, his past, his present. And so what do you see is the future for you, Salim? Because I know you've been in recovery, or you've been recovered, because I'm sure you say it that way because that's how you mean it. For a number of years. And what do you see for your future?
Well, hopefully, man, what I see for my future is I'm trying to buy me a home. I'm up in age now, trying to buy a home after you know, living in everybody else's place for such a long time, paying $1,600-$1,700 worth of rent a month. And I look now and try to buy a home for me and my wife with whatever time I have left on this earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so that is great. And Salim, do you have any plans at all on returning to your first love, Newark, New Jersey?
No. I want to go to visit Newark, man. I'm through with the North, man. I can't. Right now in North Carolina, man, it snowed and it's 37 degrees, and man, I can't take cold weather. And my wife don't like warm weather, so we try to neutralize everything by going to a middle country, state like Georgia, where or even here. But I'm a kind of person, man. Since I left Vietnam, my body has never recovered from that. You know, from being over there and coming back here in January of 1970.
Yeah. And so in the addiction, the aftermath of that, what kind of physical problems did you develop because of heroin use over the years?
What do you mean by physical problems?
Well, because I had some physical manifestations of drug use, you know, the hepatitis and the scar tissue.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I did come down with hepatitis B and hepatitis C, but my body pushed out C. I got a damaged liver from B, but I don't have B no longer as well. But I have the B virus still in my body, but it's not an active hepatitis.
Mm-hmm. Well, so yeah. You say your wife is doing okay. You know, I like to hear you. When you talk about how she's doing, because I know you guys move around a lot. And when's the last time you talked to your brother?
Right now, man, I'm sitting outside because I don't want to disturb her. She's upstairs sleeping. So okay. I'm sitting outside in my car.
Well, that is so. It's really nice for you to call in like you do, man. I appreciate all that you're doing, just call in anytime on Tuesdays from 9 to 10. And speak with us, enlighten us, and let us know how you're doing. And I certainly can use your input in every area of what's going on up here in West Virginia in terms of the opioid crisis. Yeah, and so I just want to...
Matter of fact, Matter of fact, man, mm-hmm. since you made a mention of the opioid crisis, my wife, they put my wife on those marijuana pills. They put her on Dilaudid, and they put her on diazepam, oxycodone, and all of that. And matter of fact, man, then they had her on 100 milligrams of fentanyl.
Wow.
And I almost went to jail because when we went to a place to, we thought that was going to, it's supposed to be not a, I don't know what kind of place it was, but we was going there to help her do something. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, it was a mental place. Mm-hmm. So when I walked through the door with my wife, they said, sir, you can't come in here. I mm-hmm. said, what you mean I can't come in here? My wife in here. Man, it was people in there, man, trying to recover from the opiate bar and had mental problems. So, you know my attitude, man. I get an attitude quick. It don't take me.
Yeah, I know from 0 to 100
to go off handle. So, man, I went and got my wife's daughter just in case I went to jail. I went and got her so that we can work my wife up out of this place. I got her out of that place. And everything. And I'm going to tell you how I detoxed my wife off of fentanyl. Mm-hmm. They put her on 100 milligrams of fentanyl along with all her other stuff she was taking.
Mm-hmm.
What I did, man, I dropped her doses myself from 100 to 75. I worked that for 2 weeks. I dropped it again from 75 to 50. I worked that for another two weeks. I dropped it. I kept dropping it down to 25 until mm-hmm. I got down to 25. And I did the 25 for 2.5 weeks, and then I dropped it to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then after dropping it to 12, she began to feel better. And then after 2 weeks on 12, she was able to get off of it with no problem.
All right. Good job, man. You know, that's kind of where I went with Marie. Before she passed away, had to take care of her like that. So I know you. So how's your wife faring now, Salim?
You know, she's always in pain because she has very bad abdominal pain surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as a matter of fact, man, I just gave her medication this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And really, man, I control her medication, mm-hmm. man, because I don't. I'm not going to let her get addicted. And so what I'll do at times, man, I'll drop one of her pills off so that she just feels some pain and mm-hmm. not try to cover up all the pain because yeah. I don't want her to think that she got to be dependent upon all these drugs, man, because that's where she is. Now, on this opiate stuff, man, it's rough, man.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want her on it, but right now she needs it.
Yeah, let me ask you a question about that. So during the time that you and I were doing heroin, shooting heroin and all of that, the product was much different, I think. I'm pretty sure it was in terms of the intensity and the strength of it. I don't know what it is that they're using now with the fentanyl, Salim. So what do you think about the withdrawals that are happening today as in comparison to when you and I were doing heroin, the withdrawals? It seems that it's more intense now than it was before.
Well, that's because see what it was when you and I was using drugs, we was using what we call just good heroin.
Mm.
But today the people is using other stuff mixed with it, and so it's easy for them to get addicted more quicker today, and it's harder for them to get off of it because hell, man, they don't know what they're putting into their bodies.
Oh, and we did. I mean, I remember quinine and Bonita. That was it.
We knew we was getting heroin and quinine.
Yeah,
you can cut it with the quinine. I don't know what.
Oh yeah. I'm glad we knew.
At least we thought we knew. When we used to go and buy. That blue magic
Frank Lucas.
Nicky Barnes and Frank Lucas. Now, we used to go buy some quinine and then cut their drugs because it was the kind of drug that at that time everybody wanted to buy because it was the killer.
Yeah.
It was the killer.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to be very important, Salim, that you stay in touch. I'd like everybody to know that Salim calls in. And he and I decided that we were going to write our story. It's going to be a series of really short stories, probably starting from what year, Salim? 1964? When did we first start? Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to talk about the playground and the transition and the move away from a normal life into a life of heroin addiction and escape. And we want to do it. It's unconventional. So we're going to do this podcast. And Salim is probably going to call in once or twice a month, and we're going to talk about our life growing up in Newark, New Jersey, and then we're going to have it transcribed. We're going to pick out the pieces that really stand out and put a book together for all of us to kind of look at and to remember. And Salim and I are in the process of trying to gather the voices of all of our friends and loved ones who knew us then and know us now. And there's not a whole lot of us left.
We're trying to get the ones that is left.
The ones that are left, you know, and we have some names for you like Bookworm and Skeet. Remember Skeet?
Yeah. Well, you know, Skeet is dead.
How did these people die? You're talking about people that die from drugs, right?
Yeah.
A prerequisite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Fluff dead. Fluff died. He died. Wally gone.
Yeah, family. Levert.
Bumpy Face.
Yeah.
You know who Bumpy Face is.
Yeah,
you're
talking about Hassan Billy Alexander.
Yeah.
Well, listen. Listen, so that's what you and I, yeah. you laugh. And Tennessee.
We used to call him Cradle Face, too.
Tennessee. Oh, we don't say nothing. But we ain't going to talk about no nicknames on this show. We'll do it. We're gonna figure out how to compartmentalize the segments. And we're going to talk about everything, stuff that make you laugh and make you cry. And we're going to shed some light on this epidemic and see if we can create some sort of tools that the community and the world at large can use in order to get people to stay stopped. You know, very much like you and I have done. Someone told me that I shouldn't toot my own horn too much, but I seem to not be able to help it. Especially every day that I wake up clean and sober and living a healthy, wholesome life. You know, I'm not riding dirty today. My mind is not in the gutter every time I wake up. You know, I got a driver's license today. Celine, you've had one of those for many, many years, right? And people,
you know what, though, man?
Go ahead.
For the person who told you that you don't need to toot your horn, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how a person can fix their mouth and tell a person who was on drugs for 30 years. Or whoever fought in a Vietnam War can't toot their damn horn.
Right.
You know, you should be able to toot more than your horn. You should be able to ring the Liberty Bell and say how free you are from drugs.
Amen. That's right.
And what you came through and how we lived and mm-hmm. what we did, man. That person don't know nothing about our lifestyle, man, and how we lived and grew up in Newark being robbed. And everything, uh-huh. and shotguns being put to your head, and
you know what? And we were so bad. When you came home one day and your family had moved, I remember the joke because the same thing happened to Wally. He came home. Yeah. We came home, and his mother had moved. The apartment was still open
because I was using so much drugs and I pushed them out of the damn house.
Yeah, and you ain't know where they had moved to, right?
No,
but we went in and set up camp. We went in and set up camp until the rent was due.
You remember how I came home, man? And we ain't gonna say who he is as a famous basketball player because we don't want to tarnish nobody's other name, but you know Cookie.
That nigga
went in my house and moved all the furniture out, told the people we were moving.
So that makes me think about a guy named Shaquille O'Neal. We got to put it in there. That's right. Yeah, but Shaquille, Shaq ain't use no drugs or nothing like that. But we grew up with his uncle. That's right. That's right. Newark, New Jersey. So, and we can talk a little bit about the Scared Straight program. It seems that a lot of people are familiar with that particular entity. And, you know, we grew up with one of the leaders of the Lifers group in Trenton, Rahway. They were coming out of Rahway, Scared Straight. And we can talk a lot about that. So we have a lot of ground to cover, Celine, but I guarantee you, man, if you stick with it, we're gonna get this thing done. And the opening song this morning was by a young lady. Her name is Jacqueline Carr. The name of the song is You Will Win. Just like you and I were talking a couple of months ago, and you were ready to go off the deep end about how the VA was treating you. And I knew it all the time that you was a winner. Just stick with it. But I do know also that sometimes things can get so overwhelming that your steam starts to rise up and it'll get you to act like somebody who's...
You know what? You're right, man. And I'm going to tell you, man, for the VA to tell me that they won't pay me for the cancer that I have...
From Agent Orange.
Because my cancer is a slow-growing cancer and that they're not going to pay me for the Agent Orange that I was exposed to. They're not going to pay me for the contaminated water that I drunk for 3 months down in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, that also causes cancer. They turn around and cut my check by $300 and some because I'm not dying. Mm-hmm. They want me to die in order to pay me.
Yeah, but they reinstated it, right?
They reinstated the 100% on the unemployability. Mm-hmm. Now that forced me into a situation different from yours. See, you're 100% post traumatic stress. I'm on unemployability. Mm-hmm. I cannot work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you working? You know what? But see, this is how I look at it, Celine. Because you're working right now, we're gonna write a book, my man. We're gonna write a really good, interesting book that's gonna sell. And put some money in your pocket. You know, that's, I do a lot of things, something I call dream building. I dream build because of possibilities. When I got clean, man, I think 5 years after I got clean, Celine, I would go to stores and try on really nice watches. I put on a $800 suit. Didn't have no intentions of buying it, but, you know, I wanted to try it on. When I got my driver's license, I started test driving cars, you know, and so there's possibilities. Since I've been clean and sober, I flew an airplane, you know, a wretch like me. My neighbor builds airplanes, and he let me fly his plane. Now, who the heck? So you tell me, man, that sobriety, long-term sobriety is possible. And one of the things that really helped me, Salim, was responsibility. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you take responsibility?
Well, you know, today, man, I take full responsibility for my whole life. And I take responsibility now that I understand what I did back in the past. I take responsibility for that, too. I'm not going to put it off on, well, I'm going to put it off that I didn't know at first, but I have to look at now, man, that after a while, things showed me that, you know, I was wrong in what I did to myself and to my family and how I caused my family, man, to leave their home and stuff like that. But today, I'm living a whole entirely different lifestyle. My life now today, man, is about progress for myself, for my family, for my friends, for anyone that I can help, you know, I'll do it. Anyone that I can help, I'll do it.
So
today is about change.
It is. And so with that, man, I mean, one of the things that the lady said in the song when we first opened up is that the enemy came up against your finances. The enemy came up against your family. The enemy came up against your emotions. The enemy came, but you overcame the enemy.
She is correct, man.
Yeah.
She is correct. That, I don't know who wrote that song.
Her name is.
But they are correct, man, because they did come against my finance. They did come against everything that I was about, man. They did cause my anger, man, to fly off the handle, man, and I was about to get stupid and go to jail, but then I had to think about my wife being left out here on the street.
That's right.
Them cutting our check and cutting my check and cutting her finances off while I'm sitting up in jail. It wouldn't have did me any good.
Mm-mm. You and nobody else. That's right. So yeah, I'm glad, especially me, man. I would have missed you. Yeah, I was, you know, because I've been with you, brother, and I've been with you out in the street, and I've been, and I know you, and I know you to go hard. You don't. So that's why I know that it's such a miracle, man, and recovery is possible, and it's extremely possible. That's why I try to get people such as yourself in long-term recovery to come on to the podcast here at Recovery Radio, because I want to highlight that and to show that this is not a joke. Some of the things that I find, Salim, in the recovery community is that, you know, they're romanticizing. You know, it's a fight going on. The enemy has armor. And we going at him with a tutu on, you know, I mean, not to make some kind of sexual reference or something, some kind of gender reference, but.
They shooting at a tank with a slingshot.
With a slingshot, man. It's like bringing a water bucket to a four-alarm fire, trying to put it out. So this is not a bucket brigade, and heroin and opioid addiction is not to be romanticized. But see, when you get on the other side of it, then you can talk romance, because I have a strong romance at home now with my family, with my wife. What about you? You obviously have one, because you have gone to great lengths to show your wife that you really, really love her, you know, and I take that to heart. I model myself after that. My wife and I often talk about, you know, being addicted and being in long-term recovery. So you're certainly a blessing.
I'm telling you this, man. I am really proud of you too, though, man, because I kept saying, boy, I'd be glad when my man move up off of this stuff, man. And then when you finally did, it really lightened the burden on my heart.
Amen.
Man, because I was saying to myself, after Wally passed, man, I said, man, I hope Dawood will just come on up off of that and get himself together, because I hate to see him dead. Now that Hassan, Pat, Bill, you know, all of these guys, man. And I was saying, man, I hope you just didn't go out like them guys.
Yeah, because I, you know, my last time, when I went to the rehab, I remember you took me to the rehab up in East Orange, and I showed off. But we ain't gonna talk about that right now, because we don't really have that kind of time. But you know, I just want to thank you, man, and give you the last words. I think we're gonna close out with Marvin Gaye, "What's Going On," but that's in probably about 10 minutes.
Man, you play Sam Cooke record, man.
A change is gonna come. Well, we can do that right now. We'll close out with Sam Cooke. We'll do Marvin next week. That's my man.
But I'm telling you, man,
Sam Cooke.
Anyone that is listening to my voice and they won't offer drugs, the first thing that they got to believe in is self-preservation first. Believe that they can change themselves. Mm-hmm. And they don't. I'm not saying for people who don't need a program, because some people do.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you go to a program, you got to go in there and say, I want to change.
That's right.
I want to do something for myself. I want to get married. I want to have children. I want to raise a family. I want to be more than a drug addict and walking around the street with my nose running and dirty clothes on and smelling and women selling their bodies. Go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Look beyond that. Look to yourself to change yourself.
All right, man.
That's what they got to do, man.
Miss Dotter, be proud of you, boy. I am too. Yeah, here we go. We're going to close out. Thanks, Celine.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Man, you are an amazing technician, man. I'm telling you. This is
sad. Man, I cry every time I hear that record, man.
Are you still there, Celine?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I cry every time I hear it, man.
Because I know the change that I made, and I know the change that other people can make, man. I'm telling you, man, this situation, man, is with the people, man. They got to make the change themselves. He said, man, he didn't think he could make it, but he did.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate you, man. I can feel the emotion through the phone. So this was great. Really great show, man. Thanks for calling in, Celine.
All right,
man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I didn't know he was still.